Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Nicodemus understood that Jesus was talking about something entirely new, a new birth. But that which is born of the flesh is flesh. So the best I could ever do through religious observation is come up with an external appearance of righteousness, but it doesn't affect me internally, and that's where the problem lies. I am spiritually dead. You are spiritually dead. We, all human beings, are spiritually dead.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian begins his series, Jesus Encounters. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 3, verses 1 through 16, as he examines an encounter between Jesus and the religious person. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
We're going to be looking at the Gospels and just looking at the different personal encounters that people had with the Lord. And one of the things that I hope to see come out of this is just a fresh sense of God's love for people, Christ's dealings with people, understanding how the Lord would address different, you know, issues and things in our culture today. And in each one of these encounters, of course, Jesus is ultimately bringing people into a relationship with himself. And that's the ultimate. That's what's needed. That's what everybody needs, right? Everybody needs to know the Lord. And, you know, God has called us who do know him, who have met him, to be his ambassadors, to be those that would introduce him or, you know, seek to influence them to turn to him. So I thought it'd be good for us just to get a fresh perspective on how Jesus deals with people. And hopefully as we go through this, we're going to see that, you know, the people that we're talking about, we know people like that. And it's going to benefit us personally in helping us to maybe know how to better reach out to them and connect with them. And I'm going to be looking at these encounters with Jesus from John's gospel, starting here today, as you can see, with the story of the encounter that Jesus had with this man, Nicodemus. Now, here we see Jesus in his dealings with one of the key religious leaders of his day, and informing him of his need for something more than his religious devotion if he would enter God's kingdom. So I've entitled the message today, Jesus and the Religious Person. Now, lest you think that that's not so relevant today, because as we hear some people say, oh, you know, religion is fading and they're, you know, most people are atheists now and so forth. That's just simply not the reality, even though the secularists had hoped that it would be so by today. That is not even remotely the case. Just to give you some interesting statistics in regard to religious belief around the world, there are approximately 2.2 billion people in the world that identify as Christian of some sort. 2.2 billion. 1.7 billion people identify as Muslim. 1.1 billion as Hindu. 500 million as Buddhist. And then another 800 million or so belonging to some lesser known religion, but Judaism would be included in that statistic there. So even though we hear today from our heavily atheistic influenced cultural elite that, you know, there aren't that many religious people in the world, more people are unbelievers than believers and things like that, that just simply isn't the case. Only 450 to 500 million people identify as atheist or agnostic. Now, some estimates go as high as 1.1 billion irreligious, is the way they would identify irreligious people in the world. So that puts their number at about 15% of the population. Either way, as you see, approximately 85% of the people in the world identify as religious in some way. And now, let me just specify. When I say religious, what I'm talking about is people that believe in some sort of God or spiritual reality. They believe in an afterlife and some required moral standard related to their religious belief. So that's what we're talking about. Jesus and the religious person. So 85% of the world's population is religious. What is the message that Jesus has for the religious person? That's really what we're getting at. Now, let me just say a couple of more things. Of course, when we're talking about religion and religious people, we also have to consider the varying degrees of devotion on the one hand and the legitimacy of the religion on the other. Not all religious people are equally devoted, and not all religions are equally valid. But now here in the case in John chapter 3, we have a man, Nicodemus, who is deeply religious and sincerely devoted, and his religion is the right religion. With that being the case, most people would assume that someone like Nicodemus would certainly qualify for entrance into the kingdom of heaven, but Jesus tells us something different. See, the assumption is amongst people that if you just are sincere and you do your best to adhere to whatever your particular religious conviction is, you know, in the end, everything's going to be okay. You're going to make it to heaven. But Jesus shows us something entirely different with his dealings here with this man, Nicodemus. Now, it's important to understand a little bit more clearly who Nicodemus was to know just exactly what the issue is here. And so let's just look at Nicodemus for a moment. We read about him here. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. So the first thing we're told about him is that he is a Pharisee. The Pharisees were an elite group of men who were arguably the most righteous people in the world, not merely in the land of Israel, but in the world from the standpoint of external religious observation. They were beyond meticulous when it came to keeping the smallest details of the law. Now, when we hear the word Pharisee, any of us who have been Christians for a while, or we've read the Bible, or we've studied the Bible, we oftentimes immediately think of a Pharisee as a person who was self-righteous and hypocritical. And although that was true of many of the Pharisees, it was not the case with all of them. And with someone like Nicodemus, you find that here you have a man who is a Pharisee who's genuine. He's sincere. He's sincere concerning his faith in God. He's seeking to please God, and he's doing so by living a holy life based upon God's requirements revealed in the law. Another Pharisee that would have been similar to this would have been previously known as Saul of Tarsus. And he writes concerning himself that as a Pharisee, he said he was blameless concerning the law. So he was sincere, like Nicodemus was. So we have with Nicodemus, he's a Pharisee, he is sincere, he's deeply committed to trying his best to live according to God's law. Secondly, we're told that he is a ruler of the Jews. Not every Pharisee would be identified as a ruler of the Jews. This means that Nicodemus was a member of the ruling body of the nation. The nation was ruled by a body of 70 men known as the Sanhedrin. Nicodemus was a member of the Sanhedrin. And so he's devout in his religious commitment. He is a leader in the nation. And then as you read the story, you remember there maybe, Jesus refers to him at one point as the teacher of Israel. He asked the question. He said, are you the teacher of Israel and you don't know these things? Now, note that he doesn't say, are you a teacher? He says, are you the teacher? And that could mean two things. It could mean that since the Pharisees were sort of identified as the teachers, that he's just referring to him in that sense. Or it could be that Nicodemus had risen above the rest of the Pharisees in his understanding and in his ability to articulate the faith. And so he could have been identified out of the hundreds of people who were Pharisees as the teacher. So he's the teacher of Israel. But we see also in Nicodemus that he's got some admirable qualities. He is a genuinely humble man. Now, that would not be so among many of his contemporaries, but he was genuinely humble. Why do I say that? Because when he approaches Jesus, he refers to Jesus as a rabbi. Now, rabbi was a respected term, and it was generally reserved for those who had studied in the academies and, you know, had gone through a process and become recognized. Nicodemus himself would have been considered a rabbi. Jesus had none of those things, but Nicodemus, in humility, he refers to Jesus as rabbi. He says, we know that you are a teacher come from God. And so he's humble and he's also teachable. At a certain point, he finally says to Jesus, how can these things be? So he's seeking understanding from Jesus, even though Jesus refers to him as the teacher of Israel. So in Nicodemus, we have the perfect specimen among the religious of the world. And this is what I want us to understand. We have the perfect specimen in Nicodemus. Now, if Nicodemus is the perfect specimen, and he is not able through his righteousness to enter the kingdom, then that means that everybody else is shut out as well. Now, what every religious person, regardless of what their particular religion is, assumes is that acceptance with God or entrance into heaven is based upon their efforts to live up to their religion standard of righteousness. That's what every religious person assumes. And let me again just broaden this out. We're talking about anyone who's religious, whether they identify in some way with the larger understanding of Christianity, a larger understanding meaning not strictly a biblical one, which there's plenty of that out there. Certainly 2.2 billion people that identify as Christians are not identifying as biblically oriented Christians. So we're talking about a person like that. We're talking about people who are devoted to Islam, not the Islamist, not the murderous type, but just the sincere, devout Muslim or the Hindu or the Jewish person or whatever the case. But the assumption of every person who is committed to whatever their religion might be, is that acceptance with God or entrance into heaven is based upon their efforts. In this encounter with Jesus, what Nicodemus discovers is that his assumption of works-based acceptance with God is false. That's what Nicodemus learns in his encounter with Jesus, that he has got it wrong. He's the teacher of Israel, and he has got it wrong. Now, as Nicodemus comes to Jesus here, as we read the account, I want you to notice that Jesus knows that there's a question behind the question. So Nicodemus comes. He comes by night. John notes that. And it could be that because of who he was and because of the reputation that Jesus had among some, that he felt that it was safer to come to Jesus under the cover of night as to not be seen, perhaps. But he comes to Jesus by night, and he says to him, Rabbi, we know that you're a teacher come from God, for no one can do these things that you do except God is with him. And now notice how Jesus answers. He says, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Most assuredly, I say to you. So Jesus recognizes with Nicodemus, there is a question behind his question. And the deeper question for Nicodemus is, how does one enter the kingdom? Now think about this for a moment. This guy epitomizes the religious person. He's religious in the best possible sense. He's sincere. He's devoted. He's committed. He's humble. He's all of those things. I mean, he's the kind of person that most people would look at and have that same assumption. Well, of course this guy's going to heaven. I mean, if this guy's not going to heaven, then nobody's going to heaven. That's exactly the point. Jesus says, you must be born again. Now, it's obvious that even Nicodemus didn't have the assurance of entrance into the kingdom. This is the question behind the question. This is really going on. He doesn't really know. Even though he is sincere, even though he is devout, even though he is meticulous about his observance of the law, he still doesn't really know whether he is going to make it ultimately into the kingdom. And you know, the truth of the matter is that's where religion leaves us. Religion, meaning the idea that we are going to be saved through our efforts. That's always going to leave us short. It's always going to leave us without the assurance of salvation. We can never be certain of salvation if we're approaching things this way, because we can never know whether we've been good enough. And even on a day when we might think that we've been good enough, we've still got the next day to deal with. And everything could be reversed in a matter of minutes in some cases, right? If anyone here, which I would imagine there are some of you, if anyone has ever tried to live a righteous life in order to be saved, if anyone's ever done that, you know the impossibility of ever having assurance of your salvation. There was a season in my life where I tried to do that. And I could never have any confidence. I could never have any assurance, because there was never any guarantee that 2 hours from now I was still going to be doing as well as I might be doing at this moment. So, you know, there were those brief moments where, you know, you would think, okay, God, just strike me dead right now, because I think right now I'd probably go to heaven. But if we wait a few more minutes, all of that could change. That's the reality, isn't it? So Jesus says to Nicodemus, Nicodemus, you must be born again. You need something that you cannot conjure up yourself. You need something to be done for you that you can't do for yourself. Nicodemus said in response, how can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter a second time into his mother's womb and be born? You see, Nicodemus, he is perplexed at how such a thing is even possible. But you see, the problem is he's thinking in natural terms. Jesus is speaking of things that are spiritual. And so Jesus goes on and he says, assuredly, I say to you, unless one is born of water and the Spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit. Do not marvel that I said to you, you must be born again. The wind blows where it wishes. You hear the sound of it, but cannot tell where it comes from or where it goes. So is everyone who is born of the Spirit. So Jesus now makes it clear that he's talking about being born of the Spirit. He's talking about a spiritual birth. He says that which is born of the flesh is flesh. You see, religion is an attempt in the flesh to produce the Spirit, which is an impossibility. We need a spiritual birth. Jesus calls it a rebirth. We must be born again, born anew. Some people translate it born from above. Nicodemus understood that Jesus was talking about something entirely new, a new birth. But that which is born of the flesh is flesh. So the best I could ever do through religious observation is come up with an external appearance of righteousness, but it doesn't affect me internally, and that's where the problem lies. I am spiritually dead. You are spiritually dead. We, all human beings, are spiritually dead, and the flesh, that which is born of the flesh, can only produce, in the end, the flesh. So we must have a new birth. Only the Spirit can produce in us the life of the Spirit. Jesus said, you must be born again of water and the Spirit. Now, there's discussion among Bible teachers as to, you know, just what's the difference between the water and the Spirit. In the Greek language, you know how this reads in the Greek? It reads like this: unless one is born of water and wind. Because the Greek word for Spirit is the same as the word for wind. And so in a way, it's almost like Jesus is speaking a little bit metaphorically here, but he makes it clear that he's talking about a spiritual birth. So when we get down to trying to understand, well, what's the water and what's the Spirit, you know, we know ultimately what Jesus is referring to is being born of the Spirit. And now here's the point with Nicodemus, and it's the point with all of us as well. Just as you did nothing to contribute to your natural birth, you can do nothing in the sense of religiously speaking to contribute to your spiritual birth. See, Jesus is using this picture that is, you know, to put it frankly, it's just blowing Nicodemus's mind. He's like, what? Born again? He's the teacher of Israel, and this whole concept is somewhat foreign to him. Jesus uses the analogy of birth for two reasons. Number one, because that is what is going to happen. But secondly, to show that it's not something that we do for ourselves any more than our own birth was anything that we ourselves had anything to do with. Timothy Keller put it this way. He said, what did you have to do, Jesus is asking, with being born? Did you work hard to earn the privilege of being born? Did it happen due to your skillful planning? Not at all. You don't contribute anything to being born. It is a free gift of life, and so it is with the new birth. Salvation is by grace. There are no moral efforts that can earn or merit it. You must be born again.
And now let's join Pastor Brian and Cheryl in the studio as they share about this month's resource. It's a book titled Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith.
Well, Cheryl, I want to tell our listeners about a book that your dad wrote. What is the title of this book?
It's called Why Grace Changes Everything. And you know, Brian, of all my dad's books, I think this book is the one that has had the most profound effect on people's life, because the church has lost the concept of grace for the most part. And my dad talks about his own struggle with grace and how he learned grace and how when he got a hold of grace, how it literally changed his ministry, his life, his perspective on everything.
Yeah. I do agree that it is his best book. It's a fantastic book, and it is his story. And I think our listeners are absolutely going to love it. Why Grace Changes Everything by Pastor Chuck Smith.
That's this month's resource on Back to Basics. You can order the book Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of it, then click on the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the book Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith. that unfolds the mystery of grace and reveals the surprising truth. We can never grow in grace by our own efforts. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we continue our series, Jesus Encounters. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.